Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Elda Roeder and Paul Buckley of Penguin Classics. They're celebrating their 70th anniversary with a gorgeous book, Classic Penguin, Cover to Cover. We'll also hear from Megan Holt, the project leader for One Book, One New Orleans. That reading initiative gets underway this week. It is such a pleasure to welcome my next two guests to The Reading Life. Elda Roeder is Vice President and Publisher of Penguin Classics, and Paul Buckley is the Creative Director of Penguin Classics. Together, they are responsible for keeping wonderful books on the shelves and making them look like the gorgeous treasures they are. Paul has edited a fabulous new book, Classic Penguin, Cover to Cover, and Elda wrote the preface. Elda, Paul, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
This year, we're celebrating 70 years of Penguin Classics. And Elda, you've said that few people realize that part of publishing is wandering around with a calculator keeping track of anniversaries. So what are some of the special projects for this anniversary year? It's a big one.
It absolutely is. Well, first, Classic Penguin Cover to Cover is really our visual celebration of all the collaborative work we've done with Paul's group, with the artists, with our estates and authors. And it's a great deep dive for any of our readers who love Penguin and have a Penguin Classic on their shelves to look at the extraordinary visual work that's been done. And each of these artists and the creative direction of Paul really add to that storytelling and add to, I think, the dedicated readership that Penguin Classics has. It's a great responsibility to do this in publishing, and it was a great way to celebrate for the 70th. And besides the Classic Penguin, there are two projects that we've worked on together, Penguin Orange Collection, which is coming out this fall. And basically, this is a celebration of our heritage-branded orange, white, orange striped look, but we've never done it in the U.S. before. And we've pivoted it in an exciting, modern Penguin Classics way, where Paul's worked with an illustrator, Eric Nyquist, on 12 U.S. masterpieces. And then we have Penguin Galaxy, which is a nod to our sci-fi fantasy friends. And it's a gorgeous hardcover gift edition of six incredible masterpieces.
Wow. And we have the Pelican Shakespeare as well.
Absolutely. And Paul can talk about discovering minutia for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, minutia was just an amazing find, a little bit of a serendipity, but how many of these are, Elda? 45 Shakespeare titles?
Yeah.
So it's quite a commission. It's a big responsibility. It's not something you want to mess up on. So we had Milton Glaser way back when, and then we had Riccardo Vecchio, and many great illustrators have worked on this series. And I was wondering who next, and it's just a huge commission. It's 45 books. When Manuja dropped me an email, and she was 22 years old. She was really fresh out of school, really not working in the professional field just yet. But her work was so exciting, and it was so modern. And as I was trying to decide, well, what do we do for Shakespeare, her coming into my email box and looking at her website, there was the answer. Let's go very vector with it. Let's go very modern with it. And this 22-year-old woman straight out of school then had a commission of 45 books to work on, and she's just killing it. It's just unbelievably lucky for us. We love Manuja.
Oh, yes. So much of this is serendipity, you know?
Oh, yes.
Now, Paul, you have a dream job. You really do, matching books with illustrators. So what are some of the things you take into consideration when you do that?
Voice and distinction, tone. The key here is to match material that we sort of already have preconceived notions about, we think we know, but to remind everyone that these are stories that resonate today. The clothing might be different, but the trials and the tribulations that we all go through, they don't change through the eras. So how do I make you look at this book in a modern way to make it resonate with you? And most of that is through voice and distinction. It is finding an artist who is of today, but whose tone, in a new way, in a modern way, will match that of a Jane Austen or a John Steinbeck, and sort of bring them through the years to meet us now.
It's so fascinating for me, reading this book, to hear from the illustrators themselves and their ranges of responses to the commissions. I love the way Edward Kinsella III traveled to Hannibal, Missouri.
Yeah, and dedication.
Went to Tom Sawyer Cave. And that's one of my favorite covers, that Adventures of Tom
beautiful.
Sawyer. It really captures your heart. And then Ivan Brunetti was so delighted to be given a Penguin commission, but he had never read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
We hear that a lot. And then they sort of fall in love with it. And when an artist falls in love with the material, it shows, and then you get that thing that Ivan did or that thing that Manuja does. We're all sort of discovering or rediscovering this material and resonating with it.
And one of the things I especially like is that you don't steer away from the overtly sexy.
No, we want to shock you.
Yes.
We want you to blush.
I smiled. But I think of that illustration for the Kama Sutra, for example, by Malika Favre. That's an amazing thing to have on a bookshelf.
Oh, yeah. She went on to create a whole alphabet, A through Z.
And we should say of various sexual positions.
Yeah, and there's nothing hidden. It's all there for you to see.
And then there's Noma Barr's illustration for the 40th
yep.
anniversary of Fear of Flying.
Which I sort of love in the sense that it's so spare, and it's just really almost one line, but you know exactly what's going on.
And we should say it involves a zipper.
Yes, and Erica loved that cover, and she thought Noma totally got it in terms of the strength of this unapologetic woman's voice and her sexuality and this classic book. When we saw the options of what he did, we were all so amazed and totally striking and strong. And it was a great time to actually hear back from a living author because most of the people I work with are dead. But Erica Jong just loved this cover.
So how do you decide, Elda, when it's time for a new treatment like this?
Well, there's a combination of editorial decisions. One does include a calculator sometimes when you're looking for new anniversaries. And other times it just feels like the right moment to revisit an important title and see what we can do with it. Because besides the cover, we usually update the contents in terms of getting a new introduction or maybe there's a new translation. So the fresh minds on it. And then, you know, working with Paul's group, it's just the icing on the cake in terms of having the opportunity to have people look at East of Eden again, for instance, and seeing what he and his artists will do with it.
When do you decide something becomes a classic? I'm thrilled beyond belief to see Mary Carr's wonderful The Liars Club listed mm-hmm. among these books.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of being aware of what anniversaries and themes are important around the world, as sort of the zeitgeist of the moment, and seeing how we can reflect that in our program. And then there are times when we know that there is an opportunity to work with a specific estate or title and do something special with it. For instance, we're going to be releasing for the first time in Penguin Classics editions of Lord of the Flies by William Golding, one of the greatest classics and one of the most influential classics for children and young adults. So these projects were especially exciting to see what Paul will do with it and with the artists that he picked.
And I also love the way you've made these wonderful groupings. I think about the Christmas classics. And Paul, I love that story about Roseanne Sarah's competitive feeling about your favorite
yeah.
design.
I had to edit that story three times before Roseanne would let me run it the way it's in there.
So tell our listeners.
She's still mad at me. My version of it might be different from Roseanne, so let's put that up front. There is a lot of pressure when you're tasked to bring a new series to life. And sometimes it takes a while to get to a place where everyone's like, yes, that's amazing. This is why we're doing this. And in my version of this story, it was moving a little slow. And I felt like it was looking a little too much like wrapping paper, which was just a little too obvious to me. And I was having conversations with Roseanne about how to push it along. And for one reason or another, we weren't meshing. So one night I stayed late and did a couple of designs of my own, because at the end of the day, it's my responsibility to make sure it happens by hook or crook. And Roseanne came in, saw my new designs, got very angry and marched off and went and did these amazing things. And that's exactly what we needed, or whatever, it got it done. I might feel a little bad about it, but not as bad as Roseanne thinks I should feel about it.
A little creative friction,
exactly.
You know.
Yep.
Now, Elda, you're particularly in love with this colorful drop cap series. I've seen pictures of your office. And I wonder if you'd tell us about choosing the books that were part of that A through Z enterprise.
Well, it was really exciting for me to think about what would be put into a hardcover gift edition series. And I think there's a little extra pressure editorially on, I guess, what you would use to canonize in a series like that. What I wanted to do was not give you the obvious authors. I wanted to mix it up and represent what we've been doing in Penguin Classics. There are probably more women in this series and more writers of color in this particular series than you might find in another classics publishing series. And these were on purpose. I wanted to celebrate the span of authors and titles that we have across 1,700 titles, and also to respect and represent the diverse readership that has come to Penguin Classics over the years. So combining that with the incredible rainbow spectrum that Paul's directed and designed with Jessica Hish's typography, and I'm a huge fan of her letters in general, was just so exciting. And to see these combinations, like looking at Joy Luck Club with this beautiful typography, and looking at Willa Cather's My Antonia, which is one of my top favorite classics, in that sort of sunset orange, I just feel like these will be gifts for a long time to come. And I know that people are giving them out, not just because they love Siddhartha or they love the artists of floating worlds, but because they're doing monograms of their names, or they're spelling out their children's names, or they're giving them out as wedding presents. So they're taking a life of their own. And we celebrate the fact that people love them for the certain color palette that they match. You know, they're interior designers that have them in different showrooms now. And when it comes down to it, it's a full celebration of the classics themselves. And we want to take it to the next level.
Well, I keep that Jane Eyre face out in my house all the time because I love that bee so much.
Yeah, the burning bee.
Oh, now it must have been fun for all of you to put together this book, Classic Penguin. Do you ever look back and think, wow, look at what we've done?
Matt Varga is sort of the unheralded hero here, who designed this book and did quite a lot of the work. So I look back on it, actually, and say, thank God for Matt Varga. But yeah, it's sort of a beautiful thing, but it's more beautiful that it's done. It was a lot of work.
Well, one of the things about working with classics is that, don't you feel a sense of stewardship, like you're just carrying these books along for your lifetime to the next generation of readers?
Yeah, I mean, I feel sort of like we are the team on this now, in this era, and we, you know, we come after some brilliant publishers and directors and artists, and we have great respect for the work that came before. So, yeah, we're representing what I think the world is as it is, and what readers are looking for, and the visuals that really express their desires and their interests, and that, you know, their next generation hopefully will look on the work here, and hopefully we'll have this on their shelves as well.
Well, these are the stories that have stood the test of time, and such terrific brand loyalty. People adore Penguin books.
Yeah, it's wonderful to hear that with readers, and especially because a lot of that dedication begins when they're a kid, you know, when they're students, and they look at that bird and they remember either a wonderful story or a wonderful education, and we take that very seriously.
And the bird has danced and posed and done many things over the years.
Yes, everyone should check out the bird on the Penguin Orange collection, because he's done incredible work with designing this series, and the bird is doing new things.
He goes through quite a few indignities as well, which is kind of fun.
Well, I'm sure. We've been talking with Elda Roeder, Vice President and Publisher of Penguin Classics, and Creative Director Paul Buckley. Look for this beautiful book, Classic Penguin, cover to cover. Paul, Elda, thank you so much.
Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to be your personal penguin. I want to travel with you far and wide. Wherever you go, I'll go there too. Here and there and everywhere and always with you. Please may I be your personal penguin. Imagine me, your personal penguin. I wanna be your personal penguin from now on.
Megan Holt wears many hats in our literary community. She teaches at Tulane University, serves on the board of directors for the Literacy Alliance of Greater New Orleans, and on the advisory board for the Lower Ninth Ward Street Library. Today, we'll be talking about her work as the project leader for the Young Leadership Council's One Book, One New Orleans, which is just about to get underway. Megan, welcome back to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's always such a pleasure to be here.
I love these annual get-togethers.
It's great. It's become one of the highlights of my season every year.
But it's so much fun to think that this is the 12th year. That's quite wonderful.
I'm so happy. I didn't have any idea when I started working with this project that it would grow and start breathing the way it has. But every year a new life comes into the project and it keeps me going and keeps me inspired.
And it inspires a lot of other people as well. That's what you do. So tell us about this year's selection, which is quite wonderful.
This year's selection is The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the Mardi Gras Tradition. And it's by Kim Bosdeville, who is the Dean of Liberal Arts at Xavier University. It's incredible for two reasons. Number one, as an academic, I really appreciated that it was an academic book that was accessible, because so many academic books are filled with jargon and they're not really reachable to a broader community. But this one, while not sacrificing the academic rigor, still is able to embrace that spirit of community that the Baby Dolls are so well known for. And the second reason we really love this book is because you see the Baby Dolls all the time, but you don't know anything about them. I had no idea until I read this book that they have been around for over a century. They were founded in 1912. I had no idea the deep importance of masking to these women and why they first started it. And the more I read it, the more inspired I was to really think about it in terms of literacy and its connection to this project. Because for the women in 1912, they were told, because of their race and because of their gender, you're powerless. You have no voice in this community. And masking as baby doll became a way to combat that and seize a voice when they had none. And that's also what you do when you seize literacy for yourself. You take that power and that voice and you make it your own. And you give yourself strength when you had none before.
And one of the things that's so great about this book is that it has inspired the baby dolls to return.
Exactly.
It's made such a difference in
the
community.
There's new groups every year now. Yes. And they also sort of continue that work of helping those who are powerless. The baby dolls are working with domestic violence victims. They're working in women's shelters. They're working with the homeless and really trying to get that spirit of giving a voice to those who are powerless out into the community, just the way they did in 1912.
And they're doing all that and looking good while they're doing it.
Amazing. Amazing. I want to be a baby doll, but I can't sew.
You can learn. You can learn. I mean, oh. So you have some wonderful community partners that you work with for One Book, One New Orleans as well?
Yes, exactly. We have six. We have Shell. They generously give us funding every year. And with that funding, we buy as many copies of the one book as possible. This year, it's 497.
Yay.
And we'll distribute those throughout the community. So we distribute some to the Pirates Alley Faulkner Society, and they're helping us with community outreach, a literacy campaign, really getting the word out. We also distribute some to the New Orleans Public Library. Each branch gets two or three copies, and that way, if you can't afford to go buy the book, go get it at your local library for free. We distribute some to Louisiana Books for Prisoners, because we can't forget that we're the most incarcerated city in the most incarcerated state in the world. So we try to get that book into the hands of New Orleanians far from home. We also work with WRBH, Reading Radio for the Blind, and they record the book and they broadcast it cover to cover. So if you're a visually impaired New Orleanian, you can still be a part of One Book, One New Orleans. And last but not least, we distribute to the Literacy Alliance of Greater New Orleans, and they will develop a curriculum around that book. and they teach it in their adult ed, GED, and ESL classes. So if you're new to the English language, if you're a low-level reader, you can still be a part of One Book.
That's great, considering it is an academic book.
Yes,
this makes it so much more accessible to the average reader.
Exactly.
So what are some of the events? This is one of those books that lends itself to lots of great community events coming
up,
you know?
Yes, it does.
And you always do that so well. So what are some of the big ones on the program?
August 15th, we're kicking off at the Upupadu Bar, which is historically significant to the Baby Dolls. And we're starting off with Red Beans and Reed. It's a Monday, so we'll have red beans and fried chicken, and the Gold Digger Baby Dolls will be coming out at 6 o'clock p.m., open to the public and free, as are all of our events. Please come out, start the season off right, celebrate the book. And then we roll into some more events that will really spotlight those organizations in our community working to make a difference through literacy. We have on September 24th our book drive for Louisiana Books to Prisoners at Second Line Brewing. I'm also really excited about our venues this year. I love, more than anything, local independent bookstores. And this year we have two that are hosting events. On September 1st, we have Blue Cypress Books, and then on September 29th, we have that beautiful new space for Crescent City Books down on Barone Street, and I'm thrilled to be having events there. I'm also happy that this year we have two universities, because normally we do one with Dillard, and we've done that every year for the past 4 years. The reason I love doing it is because I love the idea of getting students excited about serving the community that they're getting their degrees in. And since the Young Leadership Council is a young professionals organization celebrating its 30th year this year, we really need to get that new blood in there and encourage community service. And that's what these university events do. So our Dillard event is September 8th, and then our Xavier event is October 13th. Our Xavier event is an art exhibit. They were already planning an art exhibit by Ruth Owens that was going to run until November 18th. And this year they're letting us use our One Book event as the launch party, the opening of that art exhibit. So you'll go to Xavier University on October 13th and see these beautiful paintings of the Baby Dolls by Ruth Owens. And then that art on October 13th is then going to lend itself to our finale event on October 27th, which is held at the McKenna Museum of African American Art. And they've so long been proponents of that masking tradition of which the Baby Dolls are a part, that I'm really excited that we're closing there. It seems incredibly appropriate.
Boy, that's a rich and full schedule for the fall.
Yes, I know. I can't wait.
And Kim is such a powerhouse herself. So
she is.
That's going to make everything even more fun, I think.
And she's been so gracious. She's been at every event. She's signed books. She's promoted for us. She has become a champion of literacy in ways that I could have never imagined.
Oh, that's just great to hear. Where can people go to find out more about these events?
I would go to our Facebook page at One Book One New Orleans, where we post almost daily about our community events and about literacy in New Orleans. You can also visit the YLC website, which is ylcnola.org.
We've been talking with literacy activist Megan Holt, project leader for One Book, One New Orleans. Don't forget the kickoff event Monday, August 15th from 6 to 8 at the Upupadu Bar, 1931 Orleans Avenue, with special appearances by the Gold Digger Baby Dolls and Red Beans and Fried Chicken. It's Red Beans and Read Monday. Start reading The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition right now. Megan, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Need a paperback for a last summer trip? Here are some great choices to take along. Ages for Hawk by Helen MacDonald is one of the most absorbing memoirs I have ever read. Grief seems to be our great subject now in fiction as well as nonfiction, and MacDonald's beautifully written account of grieving her father's death is first rate. She undertakes a project, training a young goshawk she names Mabel. And the challenge of that? Establishing a relationship with the bird, reconciling herself to the cruelties of nature and loss, is not something the reader will ever forget. A Manual for Cleaning Ladies by Lucia Berlin is a collection of great stories by a writer who died in 2004. These are stories about the marginalized and struggling, the poor and immigrants, alcoholics and drug addicts, and they take places in clinics and prisons and warehouses and trailer parks. That said, they teem with life and humor. You'll remember the distinctive voices of these characters, their determined spirits in the face of terrible indifference, the way they yearn for love and family connection. Each one is like a little time bomb waiting to be detonated in the heart. City on Fire by Garth Risk-Hallberg, a Louisiana native, was a bestseller last year, and rightfully so. This panoramic tale of New York leading up to the 1977 blackout captures the energy and diversity of that city with such warmth and in such fine detail that it will stay with you as one of those definitive portraits of the city. From the very rich to the cop on the beat to the energy of the punk scene, you'll be following it all with rapt attention. St. Maisie, by part-time New Orleanian Jamie Attenberg, is a marvelous tale based on the historical figure of Maisie Gordon Phillips, a theater ticket taker at the Venice in Depression-era New York. After hours, she roams the streets, walking and smoking and helping out the people she found there, making a place in their hearts while giving her own. Maisie's story was first told by New Yorker writer Joseph Mitchell in 1940 in Up in the Old Hotel. Don't wait for this novel to become a film, though it's already been optioned for a miniseries with Helena Bonham Carter. St. Maisie is too good to miss. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Poets Nicole Iden, author of I Am One of You, and Allison Pellegrin, author of Waterlines, read from and sign their work Wednesday, August 10th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Charlie Spiller signs Confessions of an Undercover Agent, Adventures, Close Calls, and the Toll of a Double Life, Wednesday, August 10th at 6 at Octavia Books. The Garden District Bookshop Book Club discusses The Girl on the Train by Paula Hawkins, Wednesday, August 10th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Guest facilitator Elizabeth Gross leads the discussion of The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson at the Maple Street Bookshop Book Club, Thursday, August 11th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Janet Allured discusses Remapping Second Wave Feminism, the Long Women's Rights Movement in Louisiana, Thursday, August 11th at 6 at the Historic New Orleans Collection, 533 Royal Street. This is in conjunction with the Voices of Progress exhibit. Jim Tassio Tribute is the host of the Bank Street Open Mic, Thursday, August 11th at 6:30 at the Bank Street Bar and Grill. As part of the Architecture and Design Film Festival, Guy Carwell discusses and signs the modernist architecture, Friday, August 12th from 12:15 to 1 at the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities Lecture Hall, 938 Lafayette Street. Press Kabakoff discusses and signs Revitalizing Cities, the HRI Vision, Saturday, August 13th at 3:30 at the Carver Theater, 2101 Orleans Avenue. The Octavia Books Science Fiction Book Club discusses Ishiguro's The Berry Giant, Saturday, August 13th at 10:30 at Octavia Books. There will be an open mic reading Sunday, August 14th at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. And you can see today's guest, Megan Holt, at the big kickoff of One Book, One New Orleans, Red Beans and Read. That's Monday, August 15th at 6 at Oopoopadoo Bar, 1931 Orleans Avenue, with a special appearance by the Gold Digger Baby Dolls. The book selection this year is Kim Vaz DeVille's Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition. And debut novelist Benjamin Rybeck signs The Sadness, Tuesday, August 16th at 6 at Octavia Books. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.